Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Joe Openshaw, author of Those Others, Unraveling the Riddle of Homosexuality in 1965. Very long title for a very great book. We're going to be talking to him about his book. It's about a young man named Michael. Well, we're just going to get started. Joe, come on. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Nate, and I hope you're doing well, too.
Yeah, we're doing great. Joe, let me get the book. Let me get the book's name right, okay? Those Others, Navigating the Riddle of Homosexuality in 1965. I want to make sure I got the name right. It's available at your bookstore, at your local bookstores. If you don't, you make them get it. Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and it's available on Kindle. Download it. We won't talk about the other stuff. Joe, first of all, let me ask a question. What made you write this book?
A couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, actually, my uncle, who's also named Joe Openshaw, sent me some articles from the Washington Post that he had saved since 1965. He had been a psychologist in D.C. During the 1960s, and a friend or a patient of his had cut these articles about homosexuality from the paper for my uncle, and my uncle saved them all these years and sent them to me and asked me if I could use them to help our community in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I used the newspaper articles sort of as a backdrop for a novel, a historical novel.
Let me get the listeners up to date here on this. Those Others is the name of the book, and it is a historical fiction about a young man named Michael, who is an 18-year-old intern to a senator, a Caucasian white guy, and he is in the midst of his own sexual awakening. And one morning he wakes up in another senator's. He works for one senator. He wakes up in another senator's bed. And there's a copy of this Washington Post. I believe it was January 31st was the first article. And I'm going to talk. And Joe Openshaw has written a historical novel based on the fictional account of how Michael reacts to these articles as well as the civil rights struggle. It must have been amazing for America to wake up for those 5 days and see an article every day on homosexuality that didn't involve somebody getting arrested or somebody getting outed. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And I thought the same thing when I read the articles and learned that it was probably the first time such articles had been printed in a U.S. newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking of homosexuality in a positive or at least a fair way, it's not all positive, but,
mm-hmm.
but like you said, not about an arrest or something awful.
Right. The Kinsey Report had come out in, I guess, late 40s, early 50s, and it wasn't really about homosexuality, though it mentioned, you know, the Kinsey scale and stuff, but it didn't really go into the, you know, how gays were interacted and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, so and this book. Yeah, and these articles did, and the articles, I want to also tell the readers, the articles are reprinted in the back of the book, and I read the articles first. I just went right to the back because I knew I had done some research on Joe's book, and I read the articles first, and I was amazed at, yes, there were a lot of, you know, misconceptions and stereotypes that were reinforced, but I was also amazed at how gentle they were with some subjects. Is that right? Did you get the same impression?
That's true. And one other thing I was amazed at is how we are still fighting the same issues today that they were fighting in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
We have made progress, of course, but the people who are against equality use these same old arguments that
mm-hmm.
they were using at that
time. Right. I saw John Boehner's thing to DOMA, and it sounded exactly like it was right out of the 1965.
Well, you know, a lot of them are living in the past, so there you go.
She got that right. Tell me about why you included the civil rights struggle parallel to Michael's coming out and the articles.
Well, it just happened that 1965 was such a historic year, and it just gave me an opportunity to tie the two two together. And plus, growing up in Alabama, I still live in Alabama, but growing up here, you know, I was real close to what was going on during the 60s. Mm-hmm. I was, what, 9 or 10 years old then. So,
right.
You know, while I wasn't old enough to actually be involved, I was old enough to be aware of what was going on. And then later, as you know, I didn't come out until I was 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I recognize my own struggles as being akin to the struggles that some of the African-American people went through,
mm-hmm.
and the movements, the similarities of the movements. I know
mm-hmm.
there are differences. I respect those differences, but, you know, equality is equality and fairness is fairness. So
that's
they are
right.
similar.
That's right. Have you ever thought about how a straight person would react to your book? Or have you had any responses from straight people?
Oh, I have.
Okay. Tell us about them.
I guess most of the straight people that I know that have bought the book have been friends of mine or you know, acquaintances here. And the response has been positive from them, too. Of course, most of my friends are open-minded and
right.
Don't mind reading about such things. So
right.
I haven't had any response from, say, the religious right or anybody like that.
Uh-huh. I'm surprised because they respond to everything, it seems.
Oh,
well,
it
here's what my...
It just hasn't come up on their radar yet, I guess.
Well, it might. Don't worry. I mean, especially the religious right in the African-American community, which we have a lot of, and especially I live in Florida, so it's the same kind of mentality. People think it's very, very liberal down here, but it's just three counties out of a gigantic state, but the fourth or fifth most populous state, and it is very conservative. Well, here's my impression. I want to talk to you about it. I think that if and when a straight person reads your book, those others, I think they might, for the first time, realize that the African-American civil rights struggle and the gay civil rights struggle are parallel. I think a lot of them just didn't put the two and two together until it's laid out right there in front of them. What do you think about that?
I agree with that, yes. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of straight people, let's say the ones who aren't our friends, are of such a mindset that they're against one thing and wouldn't have a possibility of tying the two together, if you know what
right.
I mean.
Right.
Never
I mean,
come
never,
to their,
I agree.
It never
crossed
their mind to equate.
I know. I really think your book needs to be like on a high school reading list for that one reason, is that it does hit you. When I read a book, I try to read it. Well, what would a straight person think of this? You know, and I say, well, if they didn't really worry about, because straight white people, which is the majority of Americans, okay,
mm-hmm.
don't have a civil, are blind to discrimination. I mean, they don't have.
Well, they've never experienced it, so.
And it's not on their radar. And they don't talk about it.
Right.
You know, unless it's forced in their face, you know, like with a neighbor or a colleague or a child, it's just totally off their radar. I mean, everybody knows about the civil rights struggle. It was huge news, and everyone lived through it, and we're still living through racism today. Struggles on the Selma March, and we'll talk about the Selma March in the book in a minute, and what it meant. Some of those arguments I'm hearing today with having an African American president in the White House.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say you said you would get to the Selma March, so I'll just
right. We're going to talk about it. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and jump into the Selma March. Michael and Alan. Michael is the star of is the central character in your show, the young 18-year-old who during this book has to come out to his entire family, start dating, find a partner, move in. I mean, he goes through a lot, but a big chunk of the book, a very very good meaty part of the book, you have done an excellent job of reminding me and also telling the story of the march from Selma to Montgomery. Why don't you talk about that?
Okay. Well, you know, that's a big part of the history of Alabama.
Right.
Some people may not want to admit that, but it is.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always been fascinated with it and with the events that took place during that. But I learned so much more about it doing the research for this book than
mm-hmm.
I already knew. And,
right.
It's just an incredible story. And I'm not saying my account of it is. I'm just saying the story that actually happened is such an incredible story.
It is, with the people marching in the mud and the sun and the people who couldn't march all the way but marched part of the way and the buses and the organization, the organizational skills to pull this march off. How many people ended up in Montgomery? I don't remember.
Well, it was, I think, around 20,000. I mean,
that's a huge
amount. Right, but only several hundred ended up making that final part of the march, but
right.
a lot of them came in on that final day just
right.
for this. You know, to hear Martin Luther King Jr. and the other
right.
speakers, to be a part of it.
Right, and you have to remember, people were being killed over this. This was not a,
right.
you know, it wasn't like being arrested or being, you know, outed or anything like that. I mean, people were being killed over this civil rights struggle in Selma, between Selma and Montgomery. This is why the march happened.
Right, and a couple of those deaths are recounted in the book, of
right,
course.
Right. So there, you know, when you say 20,000, it doesn't sound like many, but a fear of death, of walking on rural roads. I mean, this is 1965. They're not walking on a superhighway. You know, they were walking on two-lane roads. Is that right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are two-lane and go ahead.
Well,
I've never been.
It's still a rural road. It's parts of it are four-lane. In fact,
uh-huh.
all of it may be now. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
My partner and I have gone down. They do a recreation of the bridge crossing every year
uh-huh.
in Selma.
Oh, okay.
And we've gone down to that. I think it was a couple of years ago we went. And that's an amazing thing to, you know, to walk in those steps
mm-hmm.
from Brown Chapel
oh, yeah.
to the bridge
right.
and to cross it and to think of what those people were going through. I don't know if you watched the little YouTube video that I made as a
yes,
trailer
I did.
For the book.
Uh-huh. I did.
Those pictures of crossing the bridge, you know,
mm-hmm.
I took those.
I did see those. I didn't realize you took those. Okay, great. It's a great trailer. You just go to YouTube.com, search for Joe Openshaw, Openshaw, and you'll find that that trailer. And on the march from Selma, to Montgomery, Alan is the boyfriend. Alan and Michael, their love seems to blossom during that time. How did that come about? What made you do that?
Well, I'm not sure if I can answer that. the love story part of their relationship or of the plot, I kind of just did it as I wrote it. If you
uh-huh.
know what I mean.
Right.
And I just decided, you know, there's a little incident that happens, a little suspicion of some
right.
something going on. And
jealousy.
You know, those kind of things I just came up with as I was writing it. But most of the things in their relationship were things that I have either seen in my relationship or things that I've seen in others that
uh-huh.
I know are common, you know, to the gay community.
Right.
Some people in the community.
It just seems so you know, very romantic to be fighting this war for civil rights for the African Americans, and then they themselves were falling in love, and a bunch, you know, their bond, you know, it just, you could tell their bond was getting stronger and stronger, you know, as the march was going on. I thought that was a great metaphor. I just loved it. I loved that whole thing, and it had a happy ending for me anyway. I didn't expect the happy ending. I'm not going to give it away, but I didn't expect the happy ending, and I'm glad to read gay books with happy I like to read gay books with happy endings. Okay, I do want to talk a little bit about how Michael reads about Franklin Kameny, who is a real life figure. He's still alive. He's in his late 80s, lives in Washington, D.C. And Franklin Kameny was an astronomer for the government, MIT trained, and he was fired for being gay. And he started the early Mattachine Society and was the beginning of this protest. The very first protest in the United States was in Washington, D.C. He, Barbara Giddings, Joe Nichols. I'll tell people why I know all this. did this protest with handmade black magic marker signs, all wearing suits, gave their names to the press, and it was the first out protest march where people weren't afraid to give their names and people weren't afraid to say demand equal rights. This was a time of the beginning of women's power, black power, so gay power or whatever had just not even be thought of, but this was the beginning of that. And that was the impetus for the Washington Post to write these articles when he was arrested and it made a splash in the papers. Have you ever read anything about Franklin Kameny? Other than what you wrote in the book? He's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And, you know, one thing that impressed me was in preparing for their demonstration that they made sure that, you know, they dressed neatly right. and nicely and looked like other Washington people of 1965.
Right.
They wanted right. to blend in or just show how normal they were.
Right.
And
that's exactly
apparently
true.
They did a good job of it.
Yeah, they did a great job. They really did. And I'm just going to give a plug for the Stonewall National Museum and Archives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which I'm a part of, and this actually the show is a part of that too. We actually have those signs in Fort Lauderdale. We put them on display every so often because we can't leave them out too long because they've been tattered in the last 40 years. But Franklin Kameny did give us a lot of his papers and the signs. He is an amazing man, and he has done a lot for the gay community in fundraising, and he still travels the country and keynote speaks at fundraisers. Yeah, he still travels. It's amazing.
I spoke to him a couple of times as I was writing the book just to get some details or some clarification on things about his protest and then also about how what their feelings were about having it at the same time as that large Vietnam War protest, you know.
Right, right. Yeah.
Those were on the same day. And
I forgot. That's also in the book, yes. Yeah. There's so many protests going on. I can't even, like, you know, that's right, the end of the war protests. So there were a lot of protests.
I mean, 1965 was just an amazing year because you had all that. You had the things going on in Montgomery. You had Johnson signing, you know, historic bills for
right.
Voting rights, but for Medicare and just all kinds of things going on. So.
Right. It was an amazing year. I was 15, but I do remember it. I was in high school, so we did study a lot of this stuff, and it was incredibly very busy, very busy year. My history class, we didn't do any of the old history. We had to do new history. I remember that. And then again in 68, when I graduated, there were the assassinations and stuff. So we did have another couple of years. Some very tumultuous years in the United States from 65 to 68. Okay, we're going to switch away from that. I also know that you work with Equality Alabama. Is that correct?
That's right. I've been on the board of Equality Alabama for a couple of years, but I'm the chairperson this year.
Good for you. Good for you. Yeah, I'm on the Florida board of Equality Florida, so right next door to you. My partner and I both are on the Florida Council. Let me ask you what's going on in Alabama. How would you give it a grade right now as to far? You've been on, how long have you been working with Equality Alabama?
This is my second year.
This is
I've
your
been
second?
A supporter for years, but second year on the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've seen Equality Alabama grow from in the last 5 or 6 or 10 years. Is that correct?
That's correct. Several years ago, we had a marriage amendment being proposed, which actually passed, and there was a lot of publicity around that, and Equality Alabama really grew during that time.
Uh-huh. We had one, too.
Fell off a little bit, but now it's growing again.
Yeah. But you do more than just the statewide things. You do a lot of local things, too, right, in the local your local chapters or whatever you call them.
Do you mean I personally, or do you mean Equality?
Right.
Does?
You're out there protesting. I've seen all your pictures. I've Googled you.
Yeah, I do. The protest you're probably seeing pictures of was before I was involved with Equality Alabama, but we had an ex-gay ministry coming to Birmingham to do their thing at a particular church, I organized a coalition between Equality Alabama, Central Alabama Pride, Covenant Church, which is a gay-friendly church, and PFLAG, the local PFLAG chapter. to protest against that ex-gay ministry. So after that is when I was contacted by Equality Alabama about being on their board. So that was kind of my lead-in into that, I guess.
Well, it was, you know, trial by fire. You jumped in there and protested. I see. Anyway, so how would you give it a grade? Are things getting better in Alabama for gay people?
You know, I live in Birmingham, well, in a suburb of Birmingham, and Birmingham is much different than the rest of the state, I think. We feel like, we can be pretty open here. We have a big Pride event. We have other activities. We've got a choral group that's, I mean, it's not a gay choral group, but it's got a lot of gay influence. And, a Stonewall chapter for the Democrats and all this here.
Right.
But I go to other parts of the state, and
there
seems to be almost nothing in some areas.
Yeah.
I'm also involved in my local church and trying to make it more accepting. And it's a Methodist church, and we're going to do, let's say, in October, a book study on Jimmy Creech's book, Adam's Gift.
Yes.
It's his story.
And, great. Mm-hmm.
We had a meeting of kind of progressive Methodists or something down in Montgomery, and the ones from South Alabama were so much less able to be open and progressive than we are in Birmingham. You know, we have several inclusive Methodist churches, so it's just a difference.
Yeah.
One part of the state to the other. And I know it's the same in Florida. I mean, you've got Fort Lauderdale, and you've got
Miami.
You know, Panama City or something.
Right, exactly. Panama City is closer to you than – I think you're closer to Panama City right now than I am physically. Panama City is in the northwest corner. It's actually in the central time zone, and I'm in the eastern time zone. Florida's in two time zones. And we have a joke here in Florida that, you know, when you're in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, where we have domestic partnership, we had a gay mayor in our little city here. We've had a gay mayor in our county here. The three or four counties that are at the very tip of Florida have very liberal anti-bullying laws, all sorts of, you know, protections for gay and lesbians. And the farther north you go, the more south it gets. That's what we say. Florida is the only state where the farther north you go, the further you go into the south. But, yeah, there are places in South Florida, in northern Florida, and central Florida especially, that are very dangerous, actually, to have rainbow flags. We still have a lot of hate crimes here, as the rest of the country is having. I think there's been a rash this week. A terrible, terrible rash. So I'm going to ask how much of this book was autobiographical. You touched on some of it, but how much of it was autobiographical for you?
Not really a whole lot. You know, that's something that people often ask me, and especially when it first came out. And I'd say, well, my mother never walked in on me when I was masturbating or anything like that. So
And the coming out. I was asking more about the coming out part. Was that similar for you, or did you have a different story?
Not at all, not at all. Because I didn't come out, like I said, till I was 40 years old, and I had been married and had children, and so my coming out story is a lot different from Michael's.
Right,
more like I would have wanted mine to be.
He did have this is a little tumultuous, but considering the times, you know, considering it was 1965, you're right, it was pretty smooth, you know, eventually. But it could have been, you know, for that era, that those are the nightmare years for coming out. Because I had the same thing. I came out later in life. I did have children. I was married. And but my coming out was pretty smooth. Most people figured it out before I came out. I was the last one. I tell the story over and over again on my son. He's a great kid. He's like in his 30s, but he's a great kid. And when I came out to him and he was a teenager, there was, you know, a little bit of drama with my ex-wife, but with him it was one word: duh.
I think I heard that word too.
Yeah, so that was kind of like, okay, I was the last one to know. So there, forget it. Anyway, so what are you writing? What's up on your writing now? What are you working?
Okay, well, I'm working on two things. One is, without giving away anything really in this book, there is a person, if you'll remember, that takes their own life that is spoken of. And I'm writing that person's story. So it's kind of a prequel to this book because it takes place beforehand.
Right.
But two of the characters in this book, Alan and that other person, are in the
in the prequel. Great. That's a great idea because I kind of like that was a whole other story that was kind of like disappeared, not disappeared, but it kind of got cut off and you felt like you wanted to know more. That's great. And what else are you working on?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on another fiction piece that is a story of a man or a male, and it takes a snippet of his life every 10 years, starting at 9 years of age.
Uh-huh.
And goes up through probably 69, I guess is when I'll quit. I don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
But so he's about the same age as these characters, or, you know, uh-huh. about my age or a little older.
Okay.
So anyway.
Okay, good. So you're keeping busy. That's great.
Yeah.
How is it promoting a book today in today's crazy world?
Well, for me, it was rather difficult, I guess I would say. I'm not a marketing person, and I self-published. I didn't have a publisher, so
Most people are now.
Me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, I had to learn how to market, so I had a few book signings and those type of things. I made the video and put it out on the web.
You've done great. You've done well. I mean, I've seen your stuff. Yeah, I've seen your stuff. Self-publishing is what's going on right now, and many of the big houses are either folding or they publish something, but it's very hard to promote. And really, when it's in your hands, what I've heard from authors, and I speak to authors several times a week, they're all saying the same thing, doing it yourself. And they all say they're bad marketers, and I look at their promotional materials, and it's all first class, as yours is. So I applaud you. You did a great job. Your website's good. Your book descriptions are good. Googling you comes up, the right things come up when you put in anything. You get some great pictures, you know. I'm just joking. All right, the last couple of minutes, I want to talk about something pretty funny. You're the second veterinarian that has been writing that I've interviewed in the last several months. I think in June I had Danny Hammond on, who has written a couple of books. Retired veterinarian who lives part-time in Fort Lauderdale, part-time in California. I'm a retired dentist. I don't know if I was clear. I kind of keep that quiet, but what is it about all these retired professional people coming out later in life and expressing themselves like this?
Oh, I don't know if I can answer that.
Was there something I don't know.
There's a good group of, there's a lesbian and gay veterinary association.
Uh-huh.
So there's a good group of gay people in the profession.
Right.
And I guess some of us just decided we want to write. So.
Yeah. I don't understand it either because you're the second veterinarian this summer. And I'm a retired dentist, and I've talked to other retired – I have a retired physician that's been writing comedy books. I'm speaking to him in a few weeks, and a lawyer. And they're all – professional people who have left their profession or done a parallel profession, and it's kind of interesting to see that many professional people that have gone into something completely different. You wouldn't think of that as a secondary. You think hunting, fishing, art, whittling, all of these.
If I did write, you might think it would be a James Herriot type book or something.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that if you were going to write, you were going to write as a dog, write as a first person dog, a fictional account of Franklin Roosevelt's dog or something. I mean, yeah, it's true. I didn't expect an answer because I don't know the answer. I don't know what makes people go into these fascinating creative professions, and it is very creative. Listen, we're at the end of the show. Is there anything you want to say at the end about your website or your book? You want to go ahead and just give it the plug. You've got 60 seconds.
Well, we can give a plug for the website. Is thoseothersthebook.com is the book's website. And, of course, people can find me on Facebook, too, if they want to be friends or find me that way.
Okay, and as I said, it's OPENSHAW, and it's Joe Openshaw, and when you just plug him into Google, you'll get everything you need.
That's right.
That's right. You've got a great name for that, so that's great. Listen, Joe, I've got to say goodnight, and thank you. This was a delight, and as I said, thanks so much for the book. I love the book. It was an easy read. Those Others by Joe Openshaw. Thank you, and good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night.